Hello, friends, and welcome to a mostly new Marvel Snap podcast, Snap Judgments. As always, I'm Roy Rogers, and I'm joined today by my friends and yours, Aaron Glazer. Aaron, how are you doing on this wonderfully gross evening here on the East Coast?
Wait, why is it gross?
Oh, maybe it's not gross up in New York, but it's definitely gross here.
Oh, it went from snowing this morning to like 60 degrees today. Look, things be happening.
That's pretty gross. Also, join us from slightly further north is my friend and yours, Chris Lavin. Chris, I would ask you normally here, how are you doing? But you're going to say the same thing you say every week. So how is the weather in Boston?
It was okay when I went out earlier, but I haven't been out in several hours. So it could be a disaster. I have no idea.
Great answer, my friend. And that laugh you heard earlier is we are joined by our wayward fourth host, Will Lentz. Will, so nice to hear your voice again. It has actually been a while since we've spoken, both literally and figuratively. How are you, my friend?
This is true. I'm personally doing pretty well. The weather here, though, I will say it's been like 20 degrees and sleeting for 2 days, so not great.
That is definitely not great. If you, my friends, would like to tell us what the weather is in your neck of the woods, you should definitely engage with us on social media. We have a Twitter account, at SnapJudgePod. We have the Snap Judgments Podcast Facebook page. And we are, of course, most importantly, on the Snap Fan Discord. We have our own channel there that is quite popping off, as the young people said 5 to 7 years ago. And we are really, really engaging there. Aaron's in there all the time answering questions. I'm occasionally there talking about breakfast that I eat. It's all very engaging and a lot of fun. And you would be supporting easily the best Marvel Snap aggregating website. So it's win-win. You get to engage with us and you get to enjoy the awesome Snap fan community. And finally, you should definitely email Chris and I, and maybe Will. I don't know if Will checks the email, but Chris and I do. And that is snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. And again, that's snapjudgmentspodcast.com. With all of that out of the way, friends, I know what we really want to talk about today. And what is that, Aaron? What is today?
That I forgot the email existed again until you said it. Every week.
It's a very straightforward email. I feel like I did a good job with the email naming thing. I don't know, Lavin. Did I do a good job with the email naming?
I mean, it seems relatively straightforward, right? Not hard to remember. I don't know.
I don't forget the email address. I forget that email exists.
What? This is how I know that Glazer's lying here and doing it as a thing. As a teacher, there is definitely one thing you never forget exists, which is email. Because it never stops, and it just keeps coming from Google Classroom, from parents, from students, from administrators, from, I don't know, some random educational website. It just comes and comes and comes until you want to die under the weight of the sheer number of emails you click archive.
I just have 15,000 emails in my inbox at my school email, and I ignore the shit out of everyone. I'm bad at this.
All right. Well, that idea of having 15,000 unread emails creates anxiety for me. So we're going to move on to saying that what we want to talk about today is patch day. But before we do that, because we're a learning podcast and about progressing, or for some of us not progressing, our sort of status as Marvel Snap players, we are going to talk to you about where we are in the last final week of the climb to infinite. Lavin, where are you right now, my friend?
I have been between 80 and 81 for a week and a half or so, I think. At least a full week, maybe a week and a half. Never going below 80, never going above 81. Right now, that is who I am as a player. Like, it's been long enough now without any change that I have hit my level. To go up from here, I'm going to have to get better.
All right, well, it's been a little while since we've checked in with you. How are you doing in Marvel Snap?
Yeah, well, anybody that was hanging out in your Discord saw me have a bit of a Marvel Snap-related mental breakdown about a week ago. So after having that weekend not go so well, I took several days off and have gotten back into things. And I think part of it was I was putting too much pressure on myself to actually care about the snapping grind that, like, I think everyone knows I just don't enjoy. Mm-hmm. And when I came back in, I quit trying to actively focus on that. And somehow I've drifted back up to 44 now, and I'm actually having fun playing a bounce deck instead of trying to, like, grind stuff out. So, yeah, I think that's a healthier place for me personally to be.
Absolutely, that's much healthier. Speaking of a healthy ranking, Glazer, what have you achieved this month?
Infinite. Three in a row.
Congratulations.
Thanks. So I'm going to talk about this later on, hopefully, if Roy lets me. Please, Roy. I think I may have the best Darkhawk non-Shuri deck. I genuinely think it's incredible. As far as I know, John Tata, friend of the cast, former friend from the previous game, made a version of it. I changed three cards and just kind of sailed to infinite with it. Now when I'm in infinite and I play it, it just crushes. I think the Shuri versions may be better just because Shuri is kind of busted and Darkhawk's kind of busted. So when you combine the two, good things happen. But if you have Darkhawk but no Shuri, I think it's great. And I also think Educated Colin's video along with another video taught me something really important about climbing, because basically the second I watched it, something clicked in my brain. But we'll tell you that later on this episode.
All right, well, that leaves just little old me, and I am exactly the same place I was for the last three episodes, which is 66. I am cursed, more like it is my own fault that I'm still stuck at 66. What I have figured out is the main leak in my gameplay, which is I am not viewing Marvel Snap fundamentally as a form of poker. I am still in a very much Magic the Gathering ladder mindset that I find really hard to get out of. And that is actually something I've noticed. I try to, and I'm not able to sustain it over time. I'm able to sort of get into the mindset of, like, you should be retreating a lot if you want to climb, instead of, like, letting it ride and you have, say, a 25% chance to win, which is a mindset that is sometimes hard to get out of, particularly because I am still playing Magic. And the other day I was in a tournament and I had a 25% outer and I drew that and I won the game and it was great. And a Marvel Snap, I definitely should have retreated in that situation. That's what put me in the position for a win and in. So it's like that mindset is really what I'm struggling with right now on Marvel Snap. And I will say, unlike Will, I am definitely in a toxic relationship with the fact that I have, for the last 3 weeks, attempted to hit 70 and come narrowly close and then fallen sometimes as low as 61 before climbing back up to my beloved 66. An absolutely shit year, too. It couldn't be a better number. It could be 69. That would be better. Even 68. Like, 68 has the Prod Spring, but it also has the Summer of Love. 66, the Watts Riot. Like, who really wants anything to do with the number 66? I am honest to goodness to say I am not super enjoying the Marvel Snap ladder right now, and I have not this month in this climb. But that does bring us to something that does bring me joy, which is opening new cards. Several of us have expanded our collection. For me, I got lucky enough to just randomly open Galactus. I finished some dailies. I bought my things because, unlike some min-maxers like Aaron Glazer, I've been opening boxes ever since. And I opened a Galactus. It was a great feeling. I love it. Galactus, though, not that great without Call. So now I'm on a open Call or find him in my shop kind of grind. Glazer, what have you opened?
So I did not open anything between last week and today. Today I spent my max saved credits along with a few unopened boxes. The very first card I opened in my very first pack was the card I had pinned, Shuri. So saved myself 3,000 tokens with Shuri. And then the very last card I opened with the very last of my credits was Sauron. So I'm pretty happy with my decision to wait. turns out, like, even opening all those packs, I guess probably because I opened two cards, I didn't end up getting 3,000 credits, so I would just be angrily staring at Shuri for with that. I only have 2,200 collector's tokens. So I opened both of those, and I've played with both. I played with Shuri plenty through Roy, and Shuri is a fairly common card. Some people don't like Sauron. Sauron's real good. I'm just going to outright say, like, Sauron is genuinely real good. Yes, he makes your deck predictable, but, like, hey, man, throw armor in that deck and have a great time. Like, remember, you have to win two lanes, not all three. And if you're dropping massive shit everywhere, it's hard to compete.
Levin, what have you opened or purchased with tokens?
Yes, yeah, some of us don't open cards. We just don't. I don't remember the last time I saw a card. It's been at least a month in which I have not seen a card opened through a collector's cache. So I spent 3,000 tokens on Shuri, who I had pinned. And now I will just wait to have something else rotate into my shop that I can pin so that I can then not open cards going forward.
Longtime listeners will remember as both Lavin and I went through pool three, he stayed a few hundred collection level lower than me and was always like two or three cards ahead of me.
It was only about 100 below you, but yes.
By the end.
Pool three luck. Unfortunately, the pool 4-5 luck being bad, there are a much more extended period in which you do not open cards. So while Laser's point is taken that I had better luck before, I'm going to have bad luck for longer than mm-hmm. he is because of the way pool 4 and 5 work.
So there is no pool 5 pity timer for listeners who don't know, but pool 4's pity timer is fundamentally 79 freaking packs.
I thought it was 40.
No, it's every 40, which means you can get one and then wait the double. Yeah? Okay. Once, the next one you will get sooner.
Okay.
Someone explained this to me in a much better way than I just did, but I teach English, not math. So, that's like, fair, you're just going to have to trust the people who do math that that is correct.
Well, I've opened three pool three cards. I've used literally all. How pool this week is
five going? Cards.
Yeah.
Five cards. I'm sorry, I apologize.
Big difference.
And how my week is going, a lot of my luck has gone into my Marvel Snap account. I even got a sweet, sweet, sweet goose variant in my shop today that I dropped that $10 on and purchased. But that brings us to the core news, what everybody is here for, which is to talk about the new patch that dropped the day of us recording, the last day of this cursed month of January. But you'll probably be listening to this in February. So Leader has finally been hit with the nerf. I don't even think bat is the right thing to describe this nerf. It's like the nerf steamroller, the nerf plastic surgery. The card is fundamentally different. It's got a heart transplant, a new heart of the card. And this leader is a 6-cost, 7 strength power, whatever term you want to use, to copy all cards played in the right.
To the right of him.
To the right.
To the right.
Not the right lane.
Yeah, just to the right of him. So you could play in the left or the center lane. So what do we think of this nerf?
I think he's bad. Like, I don't think he's a very good card anymore. He exists, and, like, you have to remember that he exists when you see how your opponent plays. But, like, if he becomes at all meta, it should be really, really simple to read when your opponent is setting up for him, and that should more or less counter him. The other problem with his lack of existence is Death Wave is back in a big way, because there's no leader to keep that in check, and, like, which also is going to mean, in turn, more Leech, because Leech royally screws Death Wave, so Chris is going to be happy. So we're working in a big circle of meta chain effects of this one thing. Death Wave is back. Leader can't keep it in check. People are going to have to start playing Leech. Surfer is going to be pushed down, and then we'll see where that leads.
Yeah, I definitely think people are going to now have the experience of the meta police person being Leech, which I agree with you. I think is actually a more toxic play experience at the end of the day than Leader, as annoying as Leader frequently is. So I think people, this is going to be, look, all four of us here have played card games for a while, decades, and people, when it comes to nerfs or bans, sometimes don't like always get what they want. All right. And but they get what they need, and what they need right now is leech. And that's a big problem, I think, for overall enjoyment. I would not imagine that people, by the time the next wave of nerfs hit, which we should probably lead with, these nerfs are not the final, like soon to be happening, nerf.
Muted yourself.
Right? You muted yourself, right?
Sorry, both Surfer and Zabu are going to be hit with the nerf bat in just some period in the immediate but indeterminate future.
No. They said next week.
Okay. Yes. Well, they're saying next week. The last time I hadn't seen this next week statement.
It was a week or so.
Yeah. So sometime in the immediate but indeterminate future, we will be getting some nerfs. So that's something to keep in mind. Lavin, Will, do you have any thoughts about this leader nerf?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know if it's good yet because I haven't tried it. But the most interesting proposed usage of leader I saw, and I think it was on Reddit, and I'm sorry, random Reddit user, I did not recall your username, so you get no credit here, was to run leader with Heimdall in a move deck. So you keep them guessing a little bit more on what lane you're going to sacrifice and what lane you're going to play to. Because if they stack right expecting a Heimdall and you leader the center, you probably just ruin their shit. And I don't think move's great, but I think that's a really interesting use for leader. So I'm sort of curious to see if that does work. Beyond that, I don't know. Like, how many 6-cost cards are you playing him above? Some, but not enough. So I think he goes to a very niche card now.
A quick question on leader, since I didn't have him in front of me right then. He's still just copying them from that turn, right? He's not copying what was already at the location, right? Yep. So am I missing like part of that potential like Heimdall fake? If they are expecting the Heimdall and they've already played hard in the right lane to signal to you, like, leader wouldn't be catching it early enough to copy it, right?
Yeah, in that case, you might just play the Heimdall, or you might play other cards as well. The leader play really is when they haven't yet gone whole hog into the right lane, and you can or potentially beat them by just adding a card or two.
It's a Daredevil Professor X card now, right? Leader.
Oh, so you can force their play.
So you can force their play where you want, and if like you can overflow one lane enough. Yeah. I don't think I thought of that until just
to you then.
Yeah, that kind of play. At least until Zabu goes away. But yeah, I don't know. I don't look. Leader probably didn't need this nerf anymore because he was fundamentally forced out of the meta by more powerful cards that he wasn't properly copying. And he was still keeping certain things in check. Again, I'd much rather have Leech get that nerf, and we'll get to it shortly, but I think Zabu really needs the nerf. But I don't, like, I think they just kind of made leader. Look, that might be a home, that control deck. Like, even like a two dinos version of it with leader at the top end still, where like one, where your Professor Xing the left lane and you've got enough power in the center. Like, you've got your dino in the center, so you know they really want to win right. And then you just drop leader there, you should be able to win. And now, like, that's an extra really big power boost in the center, too, right? Like, 8 is not nothing. 8, right?
It's 7, I believe.
Seven.
I've got the card right in front of me. Not... He is a 6 energy, 7 strength. I literally booted up Marvel Snap to see him.
He should probably have one more power, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. I don't know. He may have like an occasional control home, but he's no longer a meta card, or even if he's meta, he's no longer a meta answer card.
Definitely. I mean, it's still a powerful enough effect, and the meta is about to change ? In February for the short season. So it would be interesting to see, you know, I think the one nice thing about the January season is that things have been shown to like really innovate. There's been like a lot of innovation, I think. And like, lots of like sort of weird cards coming into the meta that I think I wouldn't be surprised if someone, now that Marvel stops becoming a little bit more popular, finds in themselves as a way to break this card, because there's definitely ways to sort of break the synergy on this. And I'm excited to see somebody do that. All right, but we should probably move on to the card that I think in the games that we played shortly before this podcast, we saw the most of, which is Wolverine. All right, Marvel's Batman got a strong buff. I was about to say nerf, but buff, where he becomes a 2/2 when discarded or destroyed each time he gets +2. So what do we think about the new Wolvie?
Poor man's Deadpool. Good card. Goes in basically every destroy. Maybe even better in some versions than the previous auto-include 2-drop of Winter Soldier. Because, like, at least he's respectable if you don't destroy him much.
Yeah, he's real good.
He's respectable if you don't destroy him much.
I mean, if you don't destroy
him,
you get
a
2/4
period. If you do him once.
Yeah.
Versus you get 2/6 out of Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think it's an auto-replace. I just think it's decent.
I think he's a solid role player now. I mean, I think he's definitely at a point where, like, he'll see play. And considering it's Wolverine, I can imagine there were some incentives for them to, you know, make the card a little bit more playable. I mean, the real question is, how good is the card? I don't know, because right now Deathwave is, like, everywhere. Because it got, as Glazer noted earlier, we talked about earlier, it's been unlocked by the leader nerf. The question is, like, how in the long term, how sustainable is that deck? Then we will really see. Because I think right now, he still only really has a home in Galactus and in so Deathwave. So, or I guess
so there's one other
kind of a Deathwave variant.
So there's one other. There's the Hoogland style Sarah Miracle that no one plays because Surfer is just better than Miracle. That runs that little death package, and I think he's decent in there. He also, in that version of the Death Wave, in that version of the Miracle, gives some reach into unreachable locations, which has added benefit as well.
Sometimes.
Unpredictably, right? Yes. Yeah. But, like, that's still value.
That's fair. Other thoughts about Wolverine? Snickety snick. All right.
Seems not, sir.
Yeah.
That brings us to Battle Mode, which was at launch a cross-regional experience, which was not something that they were originally confident in doing, but apparently the Second Dinner engineering team really, I don't know, worked their butt off in January and got it done. The only people who are here of our group who has really done Battle Pass is Glazer and Lavin played a few Battle Pass games before the show started. What was your experience experimenting with Battle Pass, Lavin?
So it was it was actually pretty well set up, I thought. So the way it works is you each start with 10 life. You lose one life per cube, and by the time you hit the fifth game, it auto snaps for you before the game starts. So you are starting at a 2-cube game. And I think my experience was, by the way, sorry. Also, you can't change decks. You have picked your deck, and you play with that deck, which I found really interesting because it meant that you would learn what the opponent was playing, and there started to be mind games about what cards you play around it, you know? And that was fun. I had a really good time in the game we played before starting.
I basically agree. I think it's awesome. I think it's super duper fun. I'm very, very excited for tournaments. And I think that this is a really cool way to do it. I look forward to things like locking cards out of games by agreement of players and shit like that to really, like, spice it up. I think that this is going to be a huge win. And I also like that they stuck it under a tab that's called, like, game modes, so we know that more are coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually did tinker around with it a little bit before we recorded as well. And I think it's implemented well. I think it's a big plus. One of the things that really stands out to me about it is it's been said by many people, and even Roy said it earlier this episode, about likening Snap to poker. And without necessarily going too far down this rabbit hole, I do think vanilla climb to infinite snap is not truly like poker, largely for the fact that, yes, you basically have a pool over your cubes, right? But you are never eliminating other people. Your goal at a poker table isn't just to win that match and then everybody shuffles up and moves to the next table after that hand. You are trying to eliminate the cash the other players have on hand. And now that we've got battle mode, now we really, truly do have poker effectively. I am trying to eliminate my opponent's pool of cash, like their health or whatever it's being termed on here. And I really like that. Like Chris was saying about being able to learn their deck, having real opportunities now to bluff and play mind games and kind of fake based on their reactions and what they showed the prior round and that type of thing. I really think this is going to be the superior snap and poker vibe type of experience.
All right. So next up, we know that Surfer and Zabu are being changed. I personally don't think Surfer really needs a huge fix. The 1 week of bad data for him does not, to me, suggest that this is a card that fundamentally needs changing. However, Zabu being something like, someone said, like 40% of the infinite meta is kind of absurd. That's insane. So, like, I get that change versus Surfer, which is seemingly, and I could be wrong, a 1 week problem. What change? Okay. I have changes I think I would be comfortable with for each. What is the change for you guys for Surfer and Zabu?
So. So in a general sense, I think I agree with you, by the way, on I don't know that Surfer needed a change. I think if you were going to make one, I saw somebody suggesting, and it might even have been Glazer, so if it was, sorry, but someone suggested, I read somewhere, bumping Surfer's cost to 4. I don't hate that at all.
Oh, I hate that. That was not me.
Okay. I don't hate that one at all, because it still provides... Surfer still provides a significant power boost without, having the option for the, triple three cost card play at the end when you have a Sarah out.
It's that you can't do two on the last turn that bothers me.
Without
Sarah. Sarah. And like, I feel like you need to be able to do two.
The problem is, I think if you go with what's likely going to be the nerf, I think, where it's just going to add plus two,
it's dead.
That deck is not playable.
That's not unreasonable. So you could give it negative strength. You could give it like negative 2 instead of negative 1. I think that would be close to enough. My personal favorite suggestion is there is no current T1 Surfer build that works without Brood. Mm-hmm. So you don't change Brood itself, you change its broodlings to 2 power. And a lot of people say that's weird. Why would it make things that are a different cost than itself? And because you they're broodlings. Two cost broodlings. So that still keeps it in both Patriot and Cerebro 2 decks. But they're broodlings. They're not the same brood, right? They're mm-hmm. the children of the brood. So having one less cost makes perfect sense to me from like a thematic game standpoint. I think that change of brood to 2 really kind of solves Surfer. And people have said to me, I've talked about this several places, and people have said to me, well, what happens when they print the next card that breaks Surfer? And it's like, well, I don't know. There's something like 33 cost cards in the great game, right? And one of them breaks Surfer. Like, maybe they just don't make another, and like they test specifically for that. So I think that's the most elegant solution. I don't think that's what they're going to do. I think they're either going to make it 4 or a 2 buff. And I think both of those, I mean, I think they just make it clunky and less fun. If they're going to go to 4, they need to at least give him like 2 or 3 power.
Yeah. Yeah, like a 4-2. I think what they're going to do is go to plus two, and I think it's going to kill Surfer decks.
Agreed. Too many Surfer games are won by 2 points.
Yep. Now, Zabu, I also agree with you on much bigger problem because of ubiquity, if the numbers we are getting are correct. Because there's two reasons to nerf a card, right? It's too powerful for what it is, and or it's too ubiquitous. I don't have the numbers on this. Second Dinner does. But if they are finding 40% of the decks in Infinite are Zabu decks, that to me goes well past the range of ubiquity that is a problem. So how do you fix him? I mean, reduce cost by one is an idea. Reduce the first card you play each turn by two is another one. I think something with that.
I like the first one by two. I think that keeps more of that explosive feel, and it keeps it feeling more substantially different in pattern than Sarah. So that'd be my preferred option on Zabu.
Yeah, that one I think might have been actually my idea. I like the first idea a lot. I've been told that because there's no other card in the game that works like that, coding that in without a full patch might be difficult. But I genuinely think, you can make Zabu a 4-2 and it's probably going to have a very similar effect and end up being okay. It makes the cost curve awkward, but that's got its own benefit, right? Like now those decks are running Psylocke and they're just, it's probably actually just a 4-1, a certain other former problem card, right? But and it runs a lot of the same play patterns. I don't know if they want two cards that sort of do that, but that's the simplest other solution. And I don't think that makes it unplayable. It just knocks it down.
It's not as flavorful, right? The whole broodling complaint about the cost, why would it do that, kind of applies to making Zabu a -1, right? It makes sense for Mr. Negative, I think. There's kind of a pun there, but it would feel weird for Zabu, I admit.
I mean, Cyclops the Mutant has no powers.
All right. Well, that was a good discussion about what nerfs we would like to see happen to everybody's favorite toxic cards, Zabu and Silver Surfer, but we also have future toxic cards to talk about, which is, of course, the March Battle Pass card, Season Pass card, has been spoiled, leaked, and that is Nimrod, who is a 5/5. When destroying, gain a copy of him in each other location. Will, what do you think of Nimrod?
Oh, putting me on the spot here, because I wanted to pick your brains. I feel like the season pass cards that I've seen so far, so everything since the game went truly live, not beta stuff, has had a very clear kind of bam archetype that jumped out looking at it. And I'm not seeing that same vibe from Nimrod here. The destroy cards come into mind that I'm dropping on turn six. I guess Zola, if I want 2/5s at every other location, or getting kind of awkward with some of the cheaper destroys like Venom or something, and then some other kind of mid-tier play. Yeah, Nimrod has not jumped out at me the same way. So what's the sauce? What's the catch I'm missing here?
Shuri Zola seems to be the thing most people are running with. And then maybe some Galactus shenanigans.
Okay, so your Zola copies then. Well, and okay, so the Nimrod are actual full copies of him. So they'll have whatever the Shuri boost was, right? Okay.
Yeah, they get whatever the boost is.
Okay.
Brood, and what's the other card? Mr. Negative, or not Mr. Negative.
Sinister.
Sinister does it too, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, there we go.
So, but that's it. I don't think, look, it's probably good for the game that they're not going Surfer, Zaboo, mm-hmm. and then that new meta defining season pass card.
Because like, I mean, you got MODOK. Like you, right. like you might be a hater, but MODOK's gonna take over. You know.
Right. So MODOK and Nimrod are much closer to the power level of Black Panther or Miles Morales.
Yeah, as the resident discard enjoyer, I will tell you MODOK is not going to take over the meta. there's just no way.
I'm a believer. But we'll get to that in the Quantumania season, which is just starting in one short week. Mm-hmm. Before we... does anybody else have any Nimrod sort of thoughts?
Nope, but they get my $10.
They do get my $10 as well.
Yep.
So... we've got some new bundles that are also coming that I think are worth talking about. So particularly since Glazer and Lavin and I have been known to wail a little bit in this game, some of them are pretty desirable, both I think from an aesthetic point of view and a value point of view. I think the big one is the next one that's coming, which is I think the next big bundle, which is Positively Charged, which features a Mr. Negative, excuse me, I almost said Mr. Sinister, Mr. Negative variant, a very nice one, excuse me, and it's 8,000 gold, and you get 3,000 collector's tokens, 6,000 credits, 155 Mr. Negative boosters, a Be My Valentine title, and a Mr. Negative variant, and a avatar.
I didn't even see this exists. How much is it?
It is 8,000 gold.
Oh, that's
so the same as the that's literally in real world, right?
That's yes. That's also literally exactly how much gold I have right now.
I have 9,000 some. Yeah.
So I'm gonna buy that.
Yeah, I also think the value is pretty good, and it's like a really desirable card. Mm-hmm. Like I think this is a popular card. I think it's a really good sort of decision. You know, they picked a good card that it's got good art. Like I think for these big expensive bundles, except for the Dino one, they've done a good job. Like I felt again, the Apocalypse was worth it. I felt that the Sunspot was worth it. This one I also buy because it's got the tokens.
Hey, where did you see that? Because I didn't even see it.
Well, Glazer, I am on snap.fan. Right. Our it's literally January 31st battle mode patch. Is the article that I'm reading, which I will link in the show notes.
Okay.
Lavin or Will, do you have any thoughts about this bundle? Are you going to buy it? Dislike? Like?
I think it's a reasonably well-designed bundle that's got good value that I may or may not buy. 3K collector's tokens is certainly nice, but... like, I don't play a lot of negative decks, so... less value there for me. I don't know. Maybe when it gets time. Like, if you ask me today, am I going to buy it? The answer is probably no, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Next is, I think, on a pure, like, aesthetic level, the Westview Story, February 14th through the 21st, 2,000 gold. Gain I Love You, Scarlet Witch, I Love You title, a Scarlet Witch avatar, a Vision avatar, and the single best-looking Scarlet Witch variant.
I like
and
mine
a
better.
Very good Vision variant as well.
Oh, I like, love
this Archer. Scarlet Witch variant is like real good.
I think this one will get me. Even I tried to set a personal standard that it would have to have like tokens for me to bother to buy it, but I think this might do it.
Yeah, it's a good. I think it's also a good Valentine's Day. It's like this is a cute Valentine's Day bundle. I got to give them credit for that one. Then there's the Steamy Hell's Kitchen, which is a little strange, but it has a amazing Daredevil variant and a very mediocre Elektra variant.
For 2000... I disagree entirely.
All right, well, we'll get to that, I guess, then. 2,000 gold gains Are You ... My Soulmate title. Okay. And and avatars of both variants. So, Chris, make the case why, when the Elektra in her Daredevil from the current Daredevil run Elektra variant exists, would you want this Elektra variant?
I really like the sense of motion in this particular Elektra variant. It's a very, very active, I think I've said before, I do a lot of miniatures gaming. One of the things you look for in poses is a dynamism. And this pose is dynamic. It evokes movement. I like the flow of the clothing there. It's just, to me, very evocative. I love this variant so much.
All right, and that brings us to a final variant to close the month out, is a 3,200 gold Deadpool, excuse me, variant that gives you 1,500 collector tokens, 3,000 credits, 299 Deadpool boosters,
91,
excuse me, and Merc with a Mouth title, which is a good title, all things considered, and you get a solid, goofy Deadpool variant. Glazer, will you buy this bundle?
That says collector tokens. So yes. So I wouldn't hate Bast. The only card I really want in the game right now that I don't have is Valkyrie. I'm going to have Valkyrie probably by the end of the week. But next month comes Ghost. And Ghost seems completely freaking amazing. It makes all of your on reveals and card effects happen last every turn. And like, Shang-Chi and Enchantress are two of my favorite cards, and I'm very, very, very hyped to get this Ghost card. And all these free collector's tokens means I will be able to afford Ghost, and if should there be something else that tickles my fancy, grab that as well. So I am in for 11,200 tokens over the next little bit.
Yeah, I think this one will pull me for sure. I don't much care about Deadpool itself, nor really this variant. It's fine, but the sheer like return on everything else, credits, tokens, and boosters, is notably better than that positively charged bundle. I mean, obviously this is cheaper, but like the sheer what am I looking for? Exchange rate on all of those others are way better here. I'm definitely in on this one.
The value's good. I'm almost certainly out. Deadpool for me is a bottom five Marvel character in my rankings, period. I despise the character. I have no interest in any cosmetics related to
it. I forget the cosmetics exist. I was just like, ooh, collector's tokens. You want how much gold? Take my gold.
I will probably, I mean, both. I will definitely probably end up by the both of them with the collector tokens. I will almost certainly also buy the Wanda variant. Like, I already see myself doing it. I'm just like, this is happening. The Daredevil one.
I'll grab the Daredevil one.
I mean...
Yeah. That's going to happen. I've been buying more variants lately, prettying up my game a little bit. So I will almost certainly grab the Daredevil one.
Definitely. The way this, if February is anything like January, I'm going to need as many dopamine hits as I can possibly get. And definitely looking at a beautiful like Scarlet Witch, that awesome Daredevil, like really good looking Alex Maleev art, that does bring me joy. So I will probably spend the money. Great dink life we got going on here. So that brings us to Glazer. This is thing you're passionate about. So I'm going to let you talk about this, you know, elitist document that you just dropped on us.
I don't know what makes that document elitist at all, but people have been working on a bot list. And I think that's useful for the player base to have. It's something I kept an eye on for my last few levels to infinite because, like, hey, man, I'm not above stealing a game from a bot to cross the threshold. So we're going to drop it in our show notes. And if you would just like to keep an eye on a bot list because you think it's handy, like I do, you'll have access to it. Also, thank you to the SnapFan Discord. I asked for it, and I wish I remembered who. I was literally playing games like right around infinite as I got it. I asked them, I was like, it's above, and then I didn't find it, and 2 minutes later they just found it for me. So thank you to whoever you are, kind stranger.
Well, speaking of kind strangers who are increasingly becoming less strange, thanks to the SnapFan Discord, we have listener questions called from our increasingly active Twitter account, thanks to Glazer being every Marvel Snap personality's favorite reply guy, is...
Can I reply to three people? Whatever.
Look, I get your notifications too, all right? Like, it's a lot of notifications. I'm like, ooh, someone is engaging with my narrow private Twitter account. No, it's Aaron replying to like 50 different Marvel Snap threads. But anyway, all right, Jonathan Convoy asks on Twitter, how much fun would it be on the data side of things, like tending, using it to identify infinite player behavior and play patterns, stuff like physiological profiles and spectrums of the player base, even combining with stuff like Fitbit or Apple Watch. Okay.
I think this would be really cool, but I don't think it's what most of the player base wants. I love psychological profile things. I care less about the physiological Fitbit Apple Watch area of it, but like psychological profiles of, say, infinite players and like patterns of behavior for that type of player, I think would be really cool to know. And like, I just think it would be really cool to know in a lot of different ways, but particularly for a closed system like an online game, I think that that would be cool.
I think it might be cool, but I do not think the amount of cool is outweighed by my fear of the dystopia that comes along with it. So I'm a pass.
I'm closer to Chris here. Less of the dystopia. It's a different type of dystopia. I feel actually these kind of card games become... the relationship between the amount of money ball that is engaged in these kind of card games and the amount of fun people have an adverse relationship. So the more you just like tweak these like random variables that are not directly related to your gameplay, and the more like data analytics, like hardcore, like number crunching, like you are paid by the Philadelphia Eagles to ensure that your team wins the Super Bowl level of like data analytics that infects these kind of games, the worse they become as competitive and semi-competitive, semi-casually competitive scenes. This is how I felt playing Hearthstone for a long time. One of the reasons why I left playing Hearthstone was how infected the Hearthstone competitive scene got with like intense data analytics. And I know this is a, like a really hot take. Like it's a very hot take. Not many people strongly disagree with me, but I think the more you moneyball this, the less fun. And the point where we could get down to like, did I eat a burrito before I sit down to play Marvel Snap? And is that going to lead to my cube equity? Is just going to be not, would just be nonsense. Like absolute dystopian nonsense.
Good enough. Our next question, our good friend of the cast, Bootman, asked us a question. He's joining us again for another episode soon for people who enjoyed that episode. He asks, Victor Dencombret, who's a content creator I'm not familiar with, challenged anyone to win a best of five against him while Den is playing Zabu and the opponent plays anything but Surfer and Zabu. Both agree that the loser must write a 1,000-word essay about why the winner was correct. Bootman asks, can he do it? I have two answers. One, can he write the essay? Holy shit, have you seen that man's videos? Yes, he can write that essay. Thing two, I think Zabu decks are very good, but not by any means unbeatable. I particularly think Shuri decks and Zero decks and Galactics decks often have good matches against Zabu decks. And I wouldn't be shocked if, like, I think Zabu is as good as anything, but I don't think it's necessarily better than everything, if that makes sense.
I think the answer to that question is presently unknowable because we don't know how good Zabu is in Battle Pass games. Like, I think you're right on the latter, but like playing Battle Pass is me knowing that Bootman queued up with Galactus. Like, I know that he has Galactus. Like, that fundamentally changes like how you play, and a Zabu player could have outs. We don't know. Like, we don't know. Like, I think in the abstract, I would definitely take Bootman's side that you could consistently, like, if it was just ladder games, like you compared every time you played against Zabu to playing a non-Zabu deck, I think you could have a good win rate. But what that means and how that translates into a, let's assume that this content creator is a good Zabu player and Bootman is a good Marvel Snap player, like what it means, like where that is, I think we just don't know because, again, it's at the point of recording, like less than 6 hours since this patch went live. So I really don't think we can make any definitive statements about this. And I definitely wouldn't want to write a 1,000-word essay right now.
Kenny? Sure. Who knows, right? I don't know how his skill compares to Den's, and so I have no idea. He absolutely can win. Will he? I don't know. You know, variance still comes into play here. So, like, Can you? Sure. Will you? I guess we'll see.
I would bet reasonable money that it's closer than people would expect. I don't think a blowout is likely in either direction. Although it's possible that, like, so my theory on why, I almost called him Chris, which just gets confusing, why Bootman is going to win is that he knows his opponent is playing Zabu, right? Which narrows the field of decks to like three that seem reasonably likely, right? Like, we're going to assume our opponent isn't playing Zabu Darkhawk very best deck in the world thing, right? Because that defeats the purpose. We get that that's the top deck. That's still an extremely hard top deck to come by. But Chris's pool of decks outside of that is extraordinarily wide. And I feel like he should be able to get a win or two just off, I know the realm of what's in your deck, and you have no idea what the realm of what's in my deck is. That's hugely important when card players are good. Also, I at least am rooting for Bootman.
Definitely, he's been on our show. How could we not have root for him? All right. So this brings us to our next question from
Mundam.
Mundam. Mm-hmm. On Discord, with Hearthstone gutting esports content and Legends of Runeterra treading water, has the time of CCG esports come to an end? With the arrival of Battle Mode, can Marvel Snap fill the void? Apparently, also, it's been revealed at some time Legends of Runeterra is ramping up its tournament scene, which is definitely going to be interesting. I liked Legends of Runeterra the time I spent with it. I just didn't have a huge investment in the IP. I have actually a lot of opinions about this, but I'm going to let you all respond first. Because I think I'm the only one of us who's watched a lot of CCG tournaments on Twitch. Maybe Lavin has.
Yeah, I've watched some.
Yeah.
This comes down almost entirely to a question of how much support is being put behind the scene by the company. Of the examples used there, Riot has a burgeoning in success. They have one of the biggest esports scenes with League of Legends, a hugely rising esports scene with Valorant, and thus have the infrastructure to be able to put around Legends of Runeterra to be able to support it. By contrast, Blizzard has shut down its Heroes of the Storm esports league several years ago. They have ramped down or shut down their Mythic Dungeon and Arena World Cup scenes. And so it is not at all surprising that they would then ramp down the Hearthstone scene as well. So I guess that's a very long way of saying it really comes down to how much Second Dinner is going to commit to it.
I have the least expertise, I think. And before Roy goes on his what is sure to be 20-minute rant...
I mean, you're like really cruel to me. I'm just gonna say consistently, all the podcasts we do, Aaron.
Wait. I have one take. Then you can go on your rant.
I'm gonna throw it to Will.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, then Will. Then we get to wait for Roy. All right. So my honest to God take is: hey, Roy and I used to comment for an LCG esport thing, and we would love. Should there be any success for this? Should any of our listeners have any say in this to do commentary for Second Dinner and Marvel Snap as an esport? That'd be awesome. I don't want to speak for Chris and Will, but I'm going to assume they'd be in too because that sounds fun as hell. I also assume that there's going to be some level of success, at least in the short term. Whether that success is sustainable comes down to the things Lavin said.
Will. Yeah. Do you have any strong feelings about this?
You know, in some ways, I think I'm pretty similar to Aaron with not having much expertise here. Watching this type of thing on Twitch has, by and large, just never hooked me. So I don't have much experience. That said, I do also agree with Chris that some level of that depends on company support. But I don't think it's required. You know, Aaron nodded at our time with an LCG, you know, Fantasy Flight Games, for any listeners that also follow the tabletop world, which was essentially nearly as hands off on that front as humanly possible. I mean, did it reach the type of viewership heights that something like a Hearthstone or Runeterra could or theoretically should, or heck, Arena? No. But like, was there a burgeoning kind of community and market for that that kind of fed on and supported and hyped itself? Yeah, I think it existed. So I think it's still very doable with Snap too. Oh, and to what Aaron also said about doing commentary on stuff. I think that would be fun. I'd be in.
Okay. I will try not to make this a 20-minute rant, but there's been exactly one successful CCG esports, which is Peak Hearthstone, before Blizzard killed it when they moved everything to YouTube. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but I think the reason why CCGs have struggled as esports is because they, it's two things. One, they're very boring to watch, even Hearthstone, and very inaccessible to watch, right? Like, as someone who actually legitimately likes sitting on his couch and watching a Magic tournament for a weekend, or in the past watching a Hearthstone tournament, like, or has watched Game of Thrones Living Card Games Canadian National Championship on Twitch, right? Like, I have done all of those experiences at some point in my life. Like, I legitimately enjoy doing this. Like, if you're not willing to put the effort in to learn the game, there's really no thrill. Like, one of the things that makes League of Legends or Valorant or Overwatch or Counter-Strike really accessible is it's really close to regular sports in the sense that, like, you can just have a football game on. Like, I had the, I care exactly about one football team, that's the Eagles. And, like, I wanted to see who the Eagles were going to play in the Super Bowl. So I had the Bengals, like, Kansas City game on the background when I was doing some work. Like, I was just able to, like, watch the spectacle of the football game, even though I don't really follow football or care about football. But you're able to follow it, like, in a vague sense, and it's exciting. Men are crashing into each other like gladiatorial games in the Roman Empire, right? League of Legends, Overwatch, Counter-Strike are the same thing. If you just, like, randomly click on Twitch into a shooter stream, like, you can just follow the violence, and you don't need to know anything about the game, and it's cool. You do that for Hearthstone? What? No. Magic? That's even worse. Right. And the same is also true for our game, Marvel Snap. Like, Marvel Snap has Marvel Heroes, which is cool. Like, I think that's something that's going for Marvel Snap compared to these other games. But it's still, like, inaccessible. It's definitely still very inaccessible. Right. And then there's this skill gap. Right. There's an illusion in card games. You see this with also poker, but poker, I think, is the one that has the biggest sort of, like, obvious skill gap. But, like, the average, like, I'm going to use Magic as an example. There's a very famous player called Reed Duke, right? I'm just going to use his name as an example of this. Your median Magic player thinks that they're, like, one or two steps away from Reed Duke, right? Because on any given Magic game, they could just show up to a tournament and beat Reed Duke, which you could never do in Counter-Strike or League of Legends. Like, you just couldn't, unless that pro player was intoxicated out of their mind, right? And maybe, probably, even in that case, you would lose. But that is not the case with these card games. So viewers ask themselves, like, why are we watching this person do it when I could just do it? And there's also been this push in the esports zone over the last 5 years to shrink and create narratives that are easily followed, to shrink the space and create sort of professional leagues and limit the number of people who sort of you follow to create these sort of narratives for coverage. That actually has had a negative impact on both Hearthstone and Magic, that both scenes are still recovering from. Magic seems to be doing a little bit better than Hearthstone, which, if you follow Hearthstone even slightly, and which I know some of the listeners do, there's a very catastrophic announcement about their tournament scene recently. And so all of these things together, I think, count against Second Dinner. They're also a small company, so they don't have the money to, like, risk it. Like, if Riot really wanted to make Legends of Runeterra a big deal, they have the money. Like, they could do it. People have thought they were going to do that from the moment Legends of Runeterra launched, but they consistently haven't. Maybe they will. Who knows? But I think that all that's saying, I think Second Dinner has the option to organically grow, but I think that there's a ceiling and people really shouldn't get their hopes up. And I think if you do, you are setting yourself up for disappointment.
To reinforce Roy's point here, an even better example of what he's talking about is the FGC, or Fighting Game Community. Because every idiot can turn on a fighting game and follow what's happening. You may not know the exact moves, but one dude's beating up another dude, and then the other dude's beating him up, and you just follow life bars. That's real, real easy to get into. The more complexity there is to a game, the harder it becomes to get into. And especially in a game like Snap or Hearthstone, like, where there isn't necessarily action you're looking up to from time to time, like you would in a football game. Football games get a ton of dead time, but then you can glance up at it for 15 seconds and watch the play that's happening, and then you go back to doing whatever you're doing. So there is that barrier there.
You know, Chris, you gave me two thoughts there. One with the fighting game community and just kind of landing in and being able to watch health bars. I wonder if Snap is a bit, I don't know, maybe more positioned than some of the more complex card games, as far as there is still a small hump to get over to watch, you know, just location totals, but that is a fairly narrow thing to look at. Like, once people know to look at that, like, you can at least catch the very base level of who has the bigger number here. You also kind of turned me onto something that, as far as kind of the visual element, that I wonder if, now my brain's forgetting. Second Dinner, right? Is that the correct name? Yeah. Second Dinner. Might be able to do to help things is to, now I don't know that this is necessarily great for everybody playing on a day-to-day basis on their phone or whatever, but for, you know, streaming viewership, upping the animations, on cards, those with interesting effects when played that, you know, graphically indicate whatever's going on. That might be another tack that they could try to help support things at least.
I do want to say one final point to build on what you said, Will. I do think as far as these games go, this game, you can tell it's designed by Ben Brode. It does have a low point of entry. Like, it is relatively easy to grok, similar to how Hearthstone was at the beginning of Hearthstone. Plus you have Marvel characters. And, you know, that gets, like, tons of Marvel stuff gets people's eyeballs. But we should definitely move on before this just becomes the sort of esports discussion, which I could definitely talk about for hours. Something I'm passionate about. So, friggin' Nutcase on Discord asks, what card abilities would you like to see in the future? A one-sided armor? A gambit that can penetrate armor? I definitely do not want to see that last one. Glazer, what do you think?
I want opponent bounce. I just want one card that bounces an opponent card. It cannot be played on turn six if you want. I don't really care. We are getting something that works the way one of my favorite cards from a previous game works, where if you play it, the next card that's played in that lane, it destroys itself and it. That is coming, and I'm so hyped for that. But in addition to that, I really, 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 really want some way to bounce my opponent's cards. It's one of my favorite interactions in card games, and I'm hoping for it eventually. Also, Ghost.
Will?
You know, I think I do like that direction with Aaron. I was thinking I would like to see another destroy effect. I don't think one that can work through armor. But I, coming from the gaming background that all of us share with Thrones, right? I'm very used to being very able to remove things from the opponent's board. So I know in a game like this, that's something that has to be very carefully done. But I do think that there is room for some other ones, maybe not a full board wipe, two cost Killmonger, but maybe something that blows up a two cost on your side and your opponent's side. I don't know. There's room to play, but I'd like to see a little bit more that could muck with your opponent like that.
Levin?
I didn't have a lot of ideas for this outside of more general thoughts. Better move support would be great. I don't even love Move, but just to make it less predictable and boring would be really, really nice, because there's a lot of interesting things you could do with more support. And I know there's data mine cards that might help that. The only other thought I have, and I don't know if the card would be good or worth playing or whatnot, but something like an Absorbing Man, but for the last opponent's when revealed play.
Mm-hmm. That is definitely a design I think cool. That design I definitely feel like they'll do sooner rather than later. For me, it's just more cards that allow you to play the game sideways. That's the funnest thing for me in card games. We currently have Galactus and Thanos are kind of the only cards. Maybe Mr. Negative also sort of does that. Those are all really fun cards, all relatively popular cards with the people who open them, even if many people consider Galactus toxic. Still, based on the latter, people who open Galactus love playing Galactus. and so more stuff that does that. Like, I can't think of specific designs. I haven't really put enough thought into Marvel Snap design to really dig into that. So that brings us to an old friend of ours, Wilkie, on Discord, who wants to ask, I think specifically Glazer, should you feel good for opening a pool 4 card right as it's going to drop to pool 3 or anytime after the drop down announcement?
I did that, by the way. I opened Titania like the day the announcement happened, or like right after the announcement happened. That's literally why I started hoarding tokens. My response was fundamentally like, I'm going to be like a bajillion freaking packs away from my next pool 4 now. And there's like actual pool 4 cards I want. Whereas that could have been a pool 3 that I didn't care about. That's how I ended up here in the first place. So like, should you feel bad? No, unless you're pool. If you're not pool 3 complete, absolutely not. If you are pool 3 complete, it's kind of an ick. Because, like, it doesn't reset your timer for that, like, long pool 4. Like, it does reset your timer for that long pool 4, whereas getting a pool 3 does not reset your timer for that long pool 4.
I don't know. You should never feel bad about opening a card. Wait, that's my attitude.
Wait. Can we back up for a sec? I admit, I'm obviously a bit more casual than you guys, but I was not under the impression that the pools operated on a timer. That there is a will you draw a card in X number of caches, but that does not alter the pool of that card. The standard like percentages still apply on that cache when it hits, I thought.
So there are two pity timers. There's the you will open a card basically once every 4.
Yeah.
Correct?
That's what I was thinking of.
When you're pool 3, and then when that hits, you also have some percentage of hitting a 4 or 5 instead. Now, there's also a pool 4 pity timer. So within a certain number of caches, Glazer, what is it again?
One in 40, so 1 out of every 79 will end up being it. One out of every 8 will end up being, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So that pity timer. Okay. So, and that timer runs both. So for you, Will, who I believe is not pool 3 complete,
correct,
you both have the every 4 guaranteed you will get a pool 3 card, or maybe a pool 4, but more likely pool 4. And then some, you could also have this additional pity timer with pool 4s.
Okay, I missed the existence of the secondary one. Okay.
So, cool. All right, that brings us to a second question from Wilkie. And I'll throw this one to Lavin. Will the battle mode affect ladder climbing? Will it make it have no effect, make it more competitive or less competitive?
What I think it will do is it will have some degree of homogenization, more likely, on the ladder, because people will have a better sense of, like, how does this deck match up into this deck, etc. And there'll be more ideas for what the best, in air quotes, deck is at any given time. I don't know if it'll make it more or less competitive, but I do think it'll make it more homogenous, though.
Should make it easier to break, right? Like, you know what everyone's playing or what a large majority of people are playing, unless it's so OP.
In poker terms, there's maybe an increased exploit there for people playing counter meta.
That's my thought as well.
I mean, we had a huge debate in our internal chat about this issue. I think it might actually be worth a future longer segment about. But I mean, my TLDR about it is tournament scenes flatten metas. Ladders fundamentally make metas more random because you just play random stuff. Now, that's not saying that there aren't metas within the ladder. Anyone who's been following Marvel Snap since the release knows that there are meta decks and not meta decks. But you run into a random assortment of them, and there's not necessarily a guarantee that you can understand, like, what are the best ones exactly? What are the worst ones exactly? Even with data tracking services, it's not that great. But with a tournament meta, there are hard, cold numbers, and there are charts that people will stare at and look at and analyze and create a lot of content about. And you will see the charts get reproduced across metas. Every single card game, this has been the case, both more casual games to like high stakes games like Magic and Hearthstone. So just get ready for a flattened, constricted meta. It's just like the nature of a tournament scene. Doesn't make it more or less competitive, but that's definitely the case.
But stick with us, yeah, and we'll try and tell you how to break it.
There we go. All right. Glazer, again, Mundham asks us if MODOK will break the meta.
He goes in a discard deck. I don't think he's like especially better than Hellcow in that particular deck. But he goes in your Apocalypse discard deck, and he's just fine there.
He's all right.
Okay. Will, do you got any opinions about this card?
Yeah. I mean, he seems fine, even aside from the Apocalypse, right? He potentially goes with Invisible Woman Hela stuff, it seems. So, yeah, I think he's another fat body option. He's fine.
He's Hellcow, okay, right? Like, he's Hellcow that costs one more.
Yeah, I think he's Hellcow that costs one more, but I think he does solve maybe, and Chris, this is where I'd be interested to see your experience. Like, sometimes playing discard, you get, like, clunky hands that are, like, even a Hellcow can't quite get you out of, like, where you need to be. And particularly if you draw your cards in the wrong order, like, you draw, like, kind of your expensive cards early. I think make the discard deck more consistent, I guess, would be where I think it is. And maybe that will push it up from, say, roughly being maybe a tier 2.5 deck to being maybe a tier 1.5 deck. No? Chris says no.
No. I put it this way. I don't know if I include him in my current discard deck.
Okay.
Okay.
He's all really, right, really, really bad if you're playing Lockjaw, right?
Oh, he's terrible in Lockjaw.
But I mean, I actually hope that the discard archetype gets moved away from
I'm not running Lockjaw right now in my discard. So.
Zabu?
It might be Zabu. I'd have to look. But it's much more of a pure classic discard now that I run. Because I find that, and to Roy's question earlier, I find that the deck's consistency is pretty good when you're running. Like, I'm running 7 cards that cause discard. I've got 2 or 3 cards that I want to be discarded, and then a couple for curve. And, like, or sorry, a Morbius to be a big body when getting the effects of the discard. Like, it's just kind of plug and play that way, you know?
Well, fire me your list when you get a shot, Chris.
Yeah.
So he's good with Dracula, worth noting, right?
Definitely, like, that's definitely the case. Yeah, I mean, if you get that Apocalypse, he is very good with Dracula.
And America, so, obviously, and America, for anyone who's not seeing how this goes. Yeah.
Yeah. So this one, I think, to quote a very unfortunate human being who shouldn't be quoted, but we're going to do this live. We have one final question before we move into Glazer's preferred segment. Our friend of the show, all right, how do you say his name again, Glazer?
Jacavio
asks, will we host a podcast tournament?
Oh,
I mean,
I hope so.
Yeah. Sooner or later.
Well, I was about to say this. Actually, Lavin, did you help Talia organize Winds of Winter back in the day? Or was that just a Talia thing?
In a light way.
In a light way. So the only, like, seasoned tournament organizers here are Will and I. And definitely not Glazer. Like, Glazer is not a tournament organizer. Not anywhere near, never organized anything. And I do not have the brain capacity right now to organize a tournament. Maybe we will have one in like over my spring break, depending on what I'm doing for my spring break, or certainly over the summer. Like, I do not have the brain capacity to organize this kind of thing. It is a lot of work.
That's not what we have a will for. where there's a will, there's a way.
There's a way. Yeah, I will admit online tourneys are a bit more work than in person, and I think maybe even more so at the moment for Snap, involving the manual pairing and trading of codes and all that jazz. So I love the idea. I'm sort of with Roy on the wait, mainly because I want to wait and see when people start putting out some sweet new tools to help facilitate and make that a smoother process.
Other thought, we could pretend that Jacavio means a podcast tournament of the four of us.
That's fair. Maybe we could do something small like that, or an invitational of a few other other like show hosts or something. That might be
interesting. Screw other show hosts. Bootman can come, but unless you want to be on our cast, you're not invited.
Okay. Well, we need our Discord play with numbers, us. So four it is.
Definitely, we could do something like that. But I think if for our listeners, like, it's definitely something that could be a stretch goal for us. But like right now, I will just say, because I know that a lot of it will fall upon me to do, I do not have the mental capacity to organize this. Like, I have to help organize a prom, people, in a few short months. So like, I am not organizing a tournament at the same time I have the brain capacity for that.
You need a union.
Well, I volunteered, by the way. I even if there were union or no union, I would be doing this. I'm doing this for my seniors. So that this is not something the school forced on me. I chose to support my senior class as a co-sponsor. I came in with my eyes wide open. I am enjoying it, but that doesn't mean it's not work. All right. But that's not here nor there. Let's jump in. Glazer, talk to us about your deck that you used to get to Infinite.
All right. So this deck, as of, 6 hours ago or so, only has one pool 5 card and no pool 4 cards. It is Sunspot, Korg, Black Widow, Mystique, Zaboo. Then the Zaboo package in this deck is Darkhawk, Shang-Chi, Moongirl, Rockslide, and White Queen. And the spice is Arrow and She-Hulk. The deck's play patterns are fairly obvious. It's got, obviously, the little Darkhawk package, which works really, really well. It's got the potential to Moongirl She-Hulk package. It's got the potential to, if you're real, real lucky, play two She-Hulks and two Darkhawks on the last turn of the game, which, let me tell you, feels real mean. It's got the surprise card of Arrow. Mystique is the worst card of the deck, almost certainly. I played it a lot now. Mystique is clunky and awkward. However, what Mystique has and does well that no one ever really thinks of is Mystique can copy Zaboo, and then you can just drop a crazy buttload of stuff at the end of the game, especially if you've Moongirled. So, like, I've had games where I go Zaboo, Mystique, Moongirl, and then just, I'm like, last turn, I have what amounts to a miracle turn of like 9 to 14 power shit, which is just crazy sauce. Deck is awesome. Not why I wanted to talk about it, though. Does anyone have anything they want to add about the actual deck itself before I get to what I want to talk about? So I was stuck in the 90s for several weeks, or I guess about 2 weeks, as I talked about. And I watched Educated Collins' video. It'll be linked in the show notes. Educated Collins is, we believe, the highest ranked Marvel Snap player in the world at above 400 right now. And he's playing a Zaboo Darkhawk deck that is not this one. The video is there. He posted like an hour video explaining all the different things, his tips for reaching high rank. There's another YouTuber who's much smaller. His name is Homeboy Maxwell. I didn't name him, but his name is Homeboy Maxwell. He is 145 rank at CL 623, which is like bonkers good. And he has many of the same points. I just found that video today, so that one didn't help me reach infinite. But I learned two, I think, really important things I want to share with our listeners. The first is, have a clear snap condition. Wait for two locations, not necessarily three, and have a card or series of cards in your hands that when you see them, you snap. You'll still lose a decent percentage of that game, of those games, but the percentage is so much lower than the percentage you win when they show up. And when you don't see that card on curve, your loss is much more likely. The most obvious example for that is obviously Zebu. When you have Zebu on three, even if they have Zebu on three, you should probably snap, because there's that percentage of time they miss it, and at that point, you're fundamentally usually collecting free cubes. Other cards for this could be in a meta where Leech isn't played, having Surfer and having Brood would be a good case to snap, or Surfer and Sarah. Having Shuri in hand with any of the potential combos for Shuri would work. I've been playing the Dexter, since I got Sauron today, the Dexter Sauron Red Skull Zero build. And if you have Sauron in hand, you are just dropping a buttload of power. And at that point, you're, again, like Sauron on curve is a snap. Having that snap condition, I'm not going to make a tortured poker analogy, but it's like having a really good opening hand. Right? It's like, all right, so you're just, you know, you're going to stay in at that point. And that's basically what you're saying you're going to do. It also lets you know that if they snap and you don't have that thing, you just go. I've been playing with a good friend of ours. His name is Derek. At our previous game, he was a national champion. I think I've mentioned him before on here. I have him fundamentally repeat to me as we get later in the game that two is double one. I know Lavin is a basketball fan. And it took 30 years for the NBA to realize how much more than 2-3 was. And like how much more than 1-2 is completely absurd. How much more 2 is than 1, not vice versa. But like that number, the doubling of that number is completely changes the math of the game. You need to run. Your job is to fundamentally always win for two where possible, whether by snapping early or two or more, obviously, by snapping early or completing the game when you're sure you're going to win, and fundamentally retreat on one, basically always, unless it is your deck falling apart when Zebu doesn't yield later results or whatever. That's the time you lose on two. And that should be one of the major keys to climbing, should you have that clear snap condition. So far, so good. Any thoughts on that? Because there's one more point. No?
No.
Okay. Last point is, and this is Educated Colin's big thing, he uses Scarlet Witch. It's have a surprise card. Whatever your deck is, figure out what card would be good in it that's not usually played in the meta. And spoiler, like 70% of the time, the answer is just frickin' Shang-Chi, right?
That actually, Roy was saying earlier, Death Wave's popping back up in the meta. You should have a reason to not run Shang-Chi if Death Wave is going to be popped up in the meta.
So sometimes it's Shang-Chi, and the deck I just described, it was Arrow. On our Twitter, you can see... you can find the game I won Infinite with, and I didn't play She-Hulk or Darkhawk in it. I played Arrow twice. They were playing a Wong Mr. Negative thing, and I screwed up their order by arrowing in one place, and then when they were like, okay, I'll do my combo over here, I just arrowed in another place and screwed them up again. And I won like 9-4 in two different locations or something silly like that. And like, it's just... have a card that they don't expect in the deck that fits. The beauty of this deck is She-Hulk is also very often a deck they don't expect in the game. Make it hard for them to play around things. Good players, especially as you get closer to Infinite, know your deck. They've played 1,000 variations of your deck. Give them something they haven't seen. And while net decking is nice, this is why I'm more confident in the flattened curve than probably seems warranted, right? Because people are going to be net decking. They're going to say KM best, won that big 120 person tournament with his surfer deck, and Cambest is phenomenal. Cambest doesn't really have to run surprise cards. He's just going to two cube you to death. But if you want to rank up faster, and that's why he stalls at around 200, I think, because he's two cubing people to death. If you want to rank up faster and you're getting stuck, that surprised card gives you your avenue to 4 and 8 cubes. And when opponents pick up on this, that's your avenue, and start doing the same, you've got to start looking for that, because that's also your avenue to losing 4 and 8 cubes. That's my spiel. That's what I wanted to get to today.
Those are all really good points, Aaron. Yeah. Does anybody have anything else they want to expand on, or questions that they have for Aaron? A lot of us were there for good parts of Aaron's climb, so we all have had some kind of experience with this story there. So does anybody have anything they want to ask him?
I'll talk to him later about a couple of things. Aaron, I want to go through at some point with you and talk about like what decks I could be playing given collection. So
yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So yeah, we'll talk about it later.
Absolutely. And something we could do in a future episode of the show is sort of talk about the meta in general once it sort of settles down here. Glazer?
Why don't we have any listeners who would like to send us a deck that they think is really good, or that they got from somewhere that they think could use a tweak? Next episode, we have absolutely no problem. We'll take two or three of those and just sort of mess with them.
Yeah, that would be fun. If we have no other things for this segment, we are going to move into our final segment of the week, which is, since everyone is going to be having access to Shuri soon now that she has moved down to Series 4, we're going to talk about favorite Shuri variants, because I'm going to lay it out here. I despise the core art of the Shuri. Like, I do not like the face. I do not like her costume. I am like, why are they misrepresenting this awesome character, both from the movie and from the comics, so poorly? Like, the base art on a lot of Marvel Snap cards is not great, but this is Shuri, particularly for a Series 5 card that she was until very recently, literally a few days ago when you listened to this, is gross. So my goal after opening Shuri was to get a variant of her. I will spoil which variant of that it is in a minute. But Glazer, since you love alternate arts the most, which one would you pick?
I'd spend on the Ryan Kinnaird Black Panther variant. Like, I think that one is gorgeous. I want that. That's the only one I think I really want. I might splurge on the Horley, but like, I really, 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 really like that Black Panther variant.
Mm-hmm. Will.
You know, I actually like this Jamal Campbell one. It feels really dynamic to me. I feel like it's kind of a different sort of composition than a lot of the promos so far, but I would throw a secondary nod to the Black Panther one.
Levin?
So I had three, and two of the three were the two the others mentioned, so I will just mention the third one as a shout out. The Shuri baby has a very Lion King type feel, and I love it.
That's true.
Absolutely. I also like, I mean, Shuri's like Black Panther suit when she was Black Panther in the comics was cool in general. And the art that they picked here is also really good. But what I ended up buying, because literally I hate the art of the core Shuri so much, I bought the Pixel variant when it was in my shop. I was just snap buy. And I like it. I find it charming. Like, it's like adorable. I find it adorable. It actually brings me joy whenever I draw her. I'm like, oh yeah, I bought the Pixel variant. I'm Shuri. When it used to be, why am I playing this card? That, like, I really like the character of Shuri, both from the movie and from the comics. And why am I forced to play this ugly ass art of a great character? But anyway, I don't have to anymore because I have the. I actually find very adorable pixel art. But I would definitely also buy the Black Panther variant if it came in my shop. All right, that brings us to just about the end of the show. But on our way out, we always, or almost always, have recommendations. So we will start with Will. Will, what do you recommend to our loyal listeners out there?
Oh gosh, and this is just open-ended
my
media
friend.
And whatever. You know,
it's almost like that other podcast.
Right? I know. I'm going to talk about stuff here that I'll talk about more on our other show next week, Props and Slops. And I'm going to recommend the new Leigh Bardugo novel, Hellbent, another kind of dark academia, magic and secret societies at Yale book. Second one in the series. Just finished it a couple days ago.
Glazer.
I recently finished The Legend of Korra with my son Noah. I love it so much. Season 2 is messy because it was only meant to be a one-season show originally, but everything else about that show is fantastic. It's got, like, the most compelling villains, where Zuko is a phenomenal villain for The Last Airbender, who eventually, like, is clearly being set up from a redemption arc by, like, episode 3. None of these villains really get redemption arcs, but they're all totally understandable and representative of real world ideologies. I find interesting. I really, really love Korra, and she feels like a real teenager in a way that very few, characters on TV, let alone cartoon characters, feel like. Korra is phenomenal, and if you dismissed it for whatever reason during its first run, and you have any interest in cartoons of similar type, it's worth watching.
Chris?
My recommendation is that you all have a more vibrant social and entertainment life than I have had for the last week, so that you may come up with something which will put you a stage above where I am, because I have nothing to recommend to you this week.
That's totally understandable. I have something that I would like to recommend, because when you listen to this, it will almost certainly, because I'm definitely not going to be able to edit this on the evening of January 31st, going to be February, which for Americans out there is Black History Month, which is an extremely important month in America that we need to, particularly if you are not a person of African descent, to reflect on the role in which people of African descent, Black Americans, have played in our country's complex and often upsetting and sad and tragic history. I have two recommendations for you to spend your time to sort of educate yourself. The first is, at this point, because it came out 7 years ago, The 13th, which is a documentary that originally was on Netflix.
Holy shit, I'm old.
Yes. The 13th, which is Netflix has put on YouTube, so you can watch it for free without a Netflix subscription. And I will also recommend another Netflix documentary that came out in 2021. I was about to say last year, but it wasn't. It was 2021, called Amend, which does have the misfortune of having Will Smith be the narrator, whatever your feelings are about Will Smith right now. But it is a really excellent documentary series that is about the ways in which rights in the United States has grown, focusing on the Black experience with lots of Black voices about what that story is. Lots of Black academics are interviewed, lots of Black thinkers, lots of Black writers. And the first three episodes, focus on the Black experience, that expand that story to include women's struggles, again, focusing on the Black experience, queer struggles, LGBT plus liberation, focusing again on the Black experience, and then immigration. So it's a really good documentary series. And of course, 13th at this point is a classic that you can use to educate yourself around both Black history and the issues still challenging people who are part of the African diaspora in the United States. And even if you're not in the United States, it's a really important history to learn. So please spend some time in February doing that. Appropriate pause. All right, now time for our social media. So if you would like to engage with us on social media, you can find us on the Snap Judgments Podcast Facebook page. We are, of course, where most of our questions came from today, on the Snap Fan Discord in our own channel. And you, of course, can also engage with particularly every snapper's favorite reply guy, Aaron Glazer, at our Twitter at SnapJudgeCast. And finally, you can email us at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. that brings us to the end of our episode. I want to thank Will for making the time to join us once again and hope he's able to do more so in the future.
Quite welcome. And as always, it's very fun to be here.
Awesome. Aaron, as always, thank you for joining us, my friend.
Talk to you soon, friends.
Lavin, thank you for joining us this evening.
Happy to be here, signing off.
And until then, friends, keep on snapping and have an absolutely awesome rest of your week. Stay safe.